Live from Miami, Florida.
I am Linda.
And I am Bella.
And this is our podcast, Mostly Peaceful Latinas, where every week we will discuss current events, politics, pop culture,
and everything else related to the state of the clown world. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Mostly Peaceful Latinas. I'm Bella.
And I am Linda.
And before we get started, don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, and continue to support us. We really appreciate everything that you guys have done up to this point. Absolutely. With all the support we've received. So, Linda.
Today we're going to go over a couple of headlines that are going on in the news cycle and pretty tragic stuff that happened yesterday. You know, a Texas elementary school shooting. This complete lunatic went into a school, elementary school, and shot a bunch of, you know, children. 19 children are dead, and two adults, including a teacher that literally risked her life and died saving her students. So, you know, our hearts are with the families affected by this incredible tragedy, the community. It's just completely unthinkable.
It's devastating.
It's very, very devastating.
I read on NPR that this is the 27th school shooting this year, you know, and it's definitely a problem that we've seen grow over the last decade or so, right? Per usual, the argument is going to end up falling on
gun control,
right? The left is going to push for gun control, and the right, per usual, is going to be on the defensive to that.
Right, which is unfortunate because they don't even wait 24 hours to politicize a tragedy. I think within hours or an hour of this tragedy, there was already, of course, our left counterparts just going on Twitter and on Instagram blaming Republicans, the NRA, you know, just starting to use this as a political tool. They don't even let the families grieve, which is, again, disgusting and unfortunate.
Everything just turns into a political topic, and the real problem doesn't get addressed.
Right.
And it's the fact that, you know, the shooter was an 18-year-old. This is practically a child.
Right.
And, you know, we heard a lot about it back in 2020 when we saw that suicide rates actually skyrocketed amongst young adults during the pandemic.
I mean, the argument's always going to be that we need to blame the gun and have more gun control because allegedly these guns are so easily accessible to people, even people with mental health issues, then they'll go on a shooting spree and tragedies like this happen, right? And they never want to talk about the person. Like, I just, right before starting this podcast, I was on Instagram and I saw this tweet by Sajar. I don't know. I guess he also has a show. And he says, it appears that people in Uvalde, which is where the tragedy happened, knew a lot about Ramos and his problems before shooting. Neighbors say they saw cops at his house multiple times. Friends say he did a lot of freakish stuff, like cut his own face for fun, and people say he had multiple fistfights in the last few years, which is obviously not to excuse that behavior, you know, from that to going to kill 21 people.
But
there are signs. These are red flags.
It raises questions.
Correct.
That these are kids that are already showing signs that they are potential danger. And, you know, I think that the conversation doesn't shift often enough into
mental health.
And are these kids truly getting the support that they need? You know, it's really different times than what I remember things being like when I was in school. Social media has really changed.
We've seen teen suicides and kid suicides from bullying. Like, we just saw a really, really bad one. It was a couple months ago. I want to say like 3-4 months ago, where parents found their 12-year-old had hung himself with his favorite sweater, and his sisters found him. It was extremely, extremely disturbing. And it all had to do with bullying that the parents were not aware of. They had no idea that the kid was being bullied. He ended up committing suicide. It's not the first one, as you mentioned, that mental health issues within with teens, with kids, there's a statistic right here, 22.3% spike in ER trips for potential suicides by children aged 12 to 17 in the summer of 2020 compared to 2019.
But nobody wants to talk about
And this
about
is by
that.
The CDC, by the way. Nobody wants to talk about it.
I recall us going into school board meetings and moms pleading about their child's mental health.
Right.
And that the concern behind the mask and the restrictions that were being put on these children way past the point where COVID was already a concern. Like, adults had gone back to regular work. There was mask mandates lifted mm-hmm. everywhere else, and it was still going on at schools. And it's almost like that direct correlation with the fact that there was this increase in suicide rates amongst these kids went completely ignored, which then
But it's been like that for a long time. When we talk about propaganda, when we talk about all the pharmaceuticals, you put all these kids on Adderall, you know, they're in elementary school and middle school.
Yeah. I mean, throw into the mix when you're now dealing with, you know, the
gender
dysmorphia that goes on at a, it seems like kids are being exposed to this confusion at a younger age. I think that that's a process that's probably complicated enough to somebody who's struggling with their gender identity, and then to kind of impose this on children that are already dealing with very high hormonal responses to life. That's what happens when you're a teenager. Right. Hormones are all over the place, and you know, it's kind of created this perfect cocktail of danger for children, right. You know, and it's truly unfortunate that the conversation on both sides always goes back to the gun control, and very little do we see about what's being pumped back in to help these kids deal with the current mental
health crisis.
Or
security measures, right? So one of the things that we do know about this, this murderer is that he came in through the back door. There was an armed security guard on property. And I believe it was a custom border patrol agent, the one that shot him. He was also shot. He survived. But then there's the conversation of why don't we have more security in schools? You know, if there's only one security guard, he can't be everywhere in the school. This kid came through the back door, right? And
there's all sorts of actual security protocols, some kind of legislation that was passed in Texas that actually required all sorts of heightened security measures, like at doors and metrics that you need, you know, biometrics and stuff that need to be in order for somebody to be able to enter the building.
Right.
And still, if we don't address, because, you know, let's go back to the conversation in 2020 where people wanted less police presence.
That's something else. And I think it happened in a state where they actually got rid of, I can't quote the state right now, where they wanted to get rid of police in schools, at schools. And it's coming from the Democratic side, right? So it's unfortunate.
Did you have cops at school?
I think we did. I remember there being security guards for sure.
We definitely had Miami-Dade County like school police in our in our school. Maybe, and I remember there being several, at all times there was always two police officers, and then we also had security guards. I mean, I went to a little bit of a ghetto school, right. But nonetheless, I remember that presence, nobody felt intimidated by it. It wasn't, the cops were actually very friendly to the students, and, you know, students that were maybe at risk of dropping out or whatnot, they acted as mentors for these children. So I guess that it's one of those arguments, again, where I don't understand what the argument from the left is on why they wouldn't want to secure our children. But then again,
well, then they hate police. Right. Also, they hate police. So they also don't want police there because they'll probably come up with an excuse that the police will racially profile some of the students and pick on them and God knows what. But I read something about that this conversation is going to go into the red flag laws in the Senate, which is extremely dangerous for our Second Amendment rights and our constitutional rights. People don't know this. We've had a conversation privately about it. But, you know, Florida, as free as everybody likes to make it out to be, free state in the nation and whatnot, Florida has red flag laws, which are unconstitutional and supported by Republicans.
Supported heavily by Republicans.
Very. In fact, Marco Rubio is one that has supported red flag laws.
Well, let's look at our two locals. When you've got Jimenez and Maria Elvira, both from South Florida.
Supporting red flag laws.
Get elected by a populist that escaped communism and knows very well what comes after you give up your guns. And these are two individuals that are elected by a populace, again, that's anti-communism. And then they go out into the Senate floor and vote with Democrats when it comes to red flag laws that, as you mentioned, we've talked about privately, completely open up the door to strip innocent regular people of their rights and their Second Amendment rights.
So let's give the people an example of red flag laws. And this is a real life scenario. People that we know, a woman accuses you, male, of domestic violence, right? She goes to the cops. She convinces the cops that you are a danger to her and possibly the community as well.
It's a false allegation. That never happened.
You haven't been detained. You haven't been behind bars, you haven't been through a jury, and the police serves you with an injunction so that you show up then to a court date to then discuss with the judge what happened, present your evidence, guilty, not guilty. Before that, though, they serve you and then they tell you that you have 24 hours to turn in your guns to your local police department because of these red flag laws. Completely against your constitution. You haven't gone through a free and fair trial to determine whether you are convicted of anything to revoke your Second Amendment rights, right? So it's based on allegations. Now, some people may say, well, you know, this could prevent some tragedies or not. You know, we're talking about the example that we're giving you. It's somebody that they lied about this person. Everything was completely fabricated. And this person had to go turn in their guns because of those allegations. And that person won't have guns until they go through this
injunction
and the jury and whatnot. So they want to do that at a national level, which I don't foresee that passing the Senate. I don't foresee it, but you never know with these Republicans who are easily manipulated by the left, by the media, that will bend and say, you know what, we'll come together, bipartisan legislation, and we'll pass it.
Yeah, scary. I mean, what scary. Were the words that Biden used to describe the Second Amendment? He said that
it wasn't obsolete.
It wasn't obsolete, yeah.
Is that how you say it?
It wasn't absolute.
Absolute, yeah.
It wasn't absolute. So there can be changes that are made to the Second. I mean, just the idea that he thinks that you could just go in and like redline our Constitution.
Yeah.
I mean, he said very terrifying things over the last year, that I would say. But that's one of the things that's really out there. And again, I think that what it does is that it shifts the conversation from where the actual solution is.
Which is mental health, more security at schools. We're sending $40 billion to Ukraine to arm their citizens, or not the military, and defend their borders, their national security, but not when it comes to our kids, you know, our education or children's education. I also found a very disturbing tweet by Obama, which he basically says that, you know, people are mourning and grieving the children that, you know, died in this tragic, you know, attack, but that people need to take some time to recognize that 2 years ago, 2 years ago have passed since the murder of George Floyd under the knee of a police officer. His killing stays with us all until this day, especially those who loved him. So,
I mean, I'm not...
George Floyd comes back.
Right, because we're in a midterm election, and what better way to recharge that energy? It's like anything... The left is very driven by emotional response.
Yeah.
So making people angry, sad, upset.
I mean, that's part of like with the SCOTUS leak as well. You have all this emotional response by the, you know, pro-choices, more like pro-abortionists. By the way, we're changing that, like that term. We got to get smart. They're not pro-choice. They're pro-abortionists, which is actually what Planned Parenthood said, that they were pro-abortionists. Up to any point in the pregnancy, because it's a woman's body. So we got to start using that. You're a pro-abortionist. You're not pro-choice. You're a pro-abortionist.
I like it. We got to call it for Got to call it for it.
Yeah. So moving on to our second headline.
So actually very relative, because the National School Board Association, you know, should be protecting our kids, actually is working to, or tried to collude. A memo was leaked that... basically stated that the National School Board of Association was asking from Biden to basically deploy the National Guard and the military to school board meetings to control, quote-unquote, domestic terrorist
parents
that are fighting, for example, anti-mask protocols.
Right.
And, you know,
this was before they walked it back.
This was before they've since had to walk it back and apologize.
Right. So the first, according to the new like information, is that first the National School Board Association asked the Biden administration to send the National Guard, basically the military,
tanks to the school board
right, meeting. Tanks to the school board meeting. And then they say, wait a minute, don't do that. Instead, label them as domestic terrorists. Right. And that way they can enforce the Patriot Act. Right. 9/11 Patriot Act. Uh-huh. And, you know, spy on these parents, which is what we have found out now through this investigation and through the House and whatnot. So once again, we're back at one of your favorite subjects, which is the school boards and the amount of power that they have on over Biden right now.
I think that, again, you know, it's something that I've consistently brought up, and throughout the coverage of this leaked memo, it's come up again. The teachers' union played a significant role in influencing CDC guidelines.
Yeah, and that came out finally. Recently.
It's proven. This isn't a conspiracy theory. They were caught influencing the CDC, and people do not. It's so frustrating that I've been talking about this for a year, and I still feel like I'm talking to the winds. Where it's like, the teachers' union has more influence over your life as a regular citizen than probably any other organization in your local government. Because what they do is that the federal government has found a way of implementing their BS by using teachers' unions to enforce those policies locally.
They have a lot of money to play.
They've got a ton of money.
They've got a lot of money to give to these politicians and influence.
They've got a lot of money. And, you know, back again, it talks about the overreach into thinking that they are co-parents, which they are not. And, you know, looking at an example like this, it's like it's become where the school boards and the teachers union, at no point in the last 2 years have I seen some kind of national example that shows that school boards or teachers union are willing to come and have a seat at the table with parents. It's been made very clear. They don't want parents involved in the decisions. Parents are a nuisance.
That's why they're labeling them as domestic terrorists. Because if you, and we've seen it not just this at the national level, we had it at our local level, where Karla Marx, the president of the United Teachers of Dade, the first meeting when she saw pushback from parents was to label them conspiracy theorists, QAnon,
before
right
anybody
wing
had talked.
You know, before anybody had talked, she was already tweeting, and a lot of nasty things were said about parents that have been showing up to the school board meetings, as well as attacks. But it's this entitlement that they have power, more or should have more power and say over your kids than you as a parent. And if you don't comply with their ideology, what they want to teach, their curriculum, then therefore you are labeled as an extremist, as a domestic terrorist.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the teachers union is, they're not just trying to be involved in things that come to your kids. You know, when you've got the teachers union being involved in initiatives when it comes to abortion, gun control, voting. Mm-hmm. What does the teachers union have to do with voting laws?
They're
right?
Basically an extension, an arm of the Democratic Party.
I mean, I would absolutely say that. And it's definitely become a problem. And I think that, you know, it's becoming so clear to the average citizen when you are just a regular parent, just showing the slightest bit of concern. And now you have to be worried about being labeled a domestic terrorist. The head of Moms for Liberty here in Florida actually made a comment where it's like, because they apologized to their members. They didn't apologize to parents for calling them domestic terrorists. And what she says, it's something that you and I have both experienced. When you've got the president of the United States, the acting president
right.
of the United States, calling parents domestic terrorists, what that does is that it scares people.
Right.
So a person
you don't want to show up again.
You don't want to show up.
Why would you want to show up?
It's only going to create a problem for me. And I've had parents tell me, I wish that I could show up to the school board meeting, but I can't.
Because I'm trying to choose between being doxxed, intimidated, harassed, my livelihood, potentially losing my job, or defending my kids. And it's just that's political intimidation, political persecution. We've seen it. We've experienced it ourselves. We want to talk about this further.
And we will. It's just, it's incredibly frustrating because until you're watching this, it's very different to hear about the persecution for parents in the news when you're actually seeing and breathing and being locally involved and watching the repercussions of that and what that does to community efforts. It's extremely, I was going to say disheartening, but it's energizing for me because it just makes me want to fight harder.
But it's also disturbing because I never imagined that I would be in the United States being politically persecuted by the left. Right. We don't do that. Like right. Conservatives don't do it. I think they will. I think that within the next 5 years, you may have an entire section of the right that's going to say, we're going to do unto you what you've been doing unto us.
So we're going to call
we are gaining a lot of leverage and we have a huge momentum right now in culture. Okay. It just happened yesterday where State Farm had to backtrack from promoting some gender identity books in school, basically after, you know, the parental rights bill to education here, aka Don't Say Gay bill passed in Florida, and other states like Texas, Utah, whatever, are taking steps to protect children from gender ideology. You have woke corporations, we saw it first with Disney, you had State Farm come in and say that they were going to promote and support some sort of youth gender organization, to help kids, whatever. And then that leaked. There was huge backlash. You know, the world of Twitter found out. State Farm people started calling customers, and then they had to retract. They had to send out a memo and say, never mind, we're pulling out of this program. Education, that type of education belongs to the parents. Yeah. So there's a lot of momentum going on for the culture. So I think we may see some backlash.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're absolutely going to see the backlash, right? And I mean, the school board topic is the one that I feel like just keeps on reoccurring and keeps on coming up. And it's like, it doesn't matter what the topic is. It's like somehow they always find a way of weaseling themselves in. And it's just, it's a topic for another day. But still a lot to talk about.
With that being said,
we're going to war. We're not anymore.
We are at war already. the Ukrainian war is a proxy war of the United States against Russia. Unfortunately, the United States is using the Ukrainian people and Ukraine to fight against the Russian man. So now we're going to fight against the Chinese man, Winnie. And so...
I mean, are we? Because here's the thing. So... He says that...
Biden?
Biden, well, yeah, hard time. So the cabbage says that he says in a press conference that he would basically defend Taiwan. Mm-hmm. But then the leaks from random people come out that that's absolutely not the case. That's his position on it hasn't changed, which is the U.S.'s policy when it comes to Taiwan has always been to remain... what was the word they used?
Neutral?
Yeah. It's like that wasn't the word. I'm trying to figure out what it was. Anyways, basically it is to remain a neutral stance and just kind of be a bystander and not look. So when you make a comment out loud, like, well, we're going to stand with Taiwan, then that clearly heightens tensions, which then brings us to this leaked phone call that came up, which I believe it was between...
Today. It just happened today.
Yeah.
So just people understand what ended up happening was that in the Civil War, like in China, government lost. They went to the island of Taiwan and they started like their democracy. And so in 2021... Xi Jinping is how you say his name. I never know how to say Winnie the Pooh's name, but he basically vowed to reunify with Taiwan. He didn't mention that it would be by force, but we do know that the government of Taiwan does not want that. So now, President Trump's out of office. He sees Russia's move or invasion on Ukraine, and it's kind of like an open format, open floor for him to say, well, the U.S. is at its weakest point. We can actually move in to Taiwan, take over. One of the things that he said, or one of the things that this leaked audio said, is that the Chinese Communist Party discusses military plans with, they plan to deploy about 140,000 soldiers, 933 ships. They, and I quote, they say, smashing independent forces and not hesitating to start a war, the top leadership discussed. They also talk about defending national sovereignty and territorial integrity. So this leaked on Twitter today. It made its rounds around different accounts and stuff like that. It came from an Indian newspaper or an Indian source.
There was a meeting happening between.
I don't think it came from it didn't come from a meeting. Just the Indian newspaper broke the news. Basically, that's how we got a hold of it. But if this does happen, I actually don't foresee Biden doing much against China. And if they did, we'd be screwed.
I think that's kind of the deal, that it's everybody's kind of confused by his original statement of saying that he would stand with Taiwan, because that's just not the policy of his administration.
Yeah.
So he just like went against all the experts on live TV. But he's done that multiple times. And then like kind of looked around and walked away. And then it's up to these, you know, anonymous leakers that then go to the press and it's like, oh, well, that's not what he meant. And no, we won't be doing that. But meanwhile, what it does is that, you know, China has access to our press, so they're watching our. It doesn't matter how many anonymous leaks comes out. The acting president of the United States comes out on TV and says, "Yeah, we'll go toe to toe with you if you come for Taiwan." Those are pretty
harsh words.
Yeah. So it seems like in times past, there's been doubts that the Chinese power basically had the military power to take over Taiwan, but that's not necessarily the case right now.
We have bases like in Taiwan. That's also the case, that we have military bases in Taiwan. So,
but they are in a very powerful position right now, which then strikes where there was a sense of like, well, China would never even try. We're not entirely sure that that's the case anymore.
Yeah, and especially, like I said, watching Putin do his thing in Ukraine and not care. And, you know, it's turned out to for his advantage, whether they canceled him from the world or not. And Russians, the Russian economy is not tanking. The rubble is up, and they're not completely being destroyed like the globalists thought they would be. And I think that
they wanted to convince everybody that it would be.
Right. Yeah. So with
speaking of Vladimir in places that he's not participating in.
Right. So one of the only world leaders from a country, like a major country like Russia, is Vladimir. But Vladdy is not in Davos. He's not at the World Economic Forum. So the other day, I haven't been posting on my Instagram at all, but I went on Twitter. You know, I like to go on my Twitter late night searches. And so I'm reading comments about the World Economic Forum. I'm watching what people are saying. And then I had completely forgotten that Putin was banned, and the Russian oligarchs, like Russian everybody, was banned from the World Economic Forum, which is such a huge win for the Russian people. Like, I don't know how these people are getting all the W's. I'm like, I can't, and I don't even want to like deal with like the Ukrainian people in my DMs and stuff. So I just don't even post about it. But it's hilarious because they essentially remove him from the worst organization that wants to control the entire world and wants to transform us into like transhumans, and he's the only one not there. All his enemies are in one spot, and this guy has nukes. and I'm thinking to myself, what would I do?
Luckily
for everybody, I don't have nukes like, you know, Vladimir Putin.
It's like
Very upsetting.
Vladdy not being at the WEF, it's kind of like when you make plans and then somebody calls you and they're like, oh, never mind, we're not going to be there anymore. But you didn't want to go anyway. Right. So you're just like, oh, thank God, my comfy pants. It's like, that's literally Vladdy right now, chilling on the couch in his comfy pants. Like, ain't nobody trying to go to your party anyway.
And that's a lot of self-restraint, let me tell you, because that couldn't be me. Like, that couldn't be me.
Luckily for the rest of them.
There's all these like hilarious tweets of people saying, dear Vladimir Putin, please do not bomb our leaders. Please don't attack them. They're all at the same place. Like, that's when I remembered. I'm like, oh my God, these people are so funny. And they have this house, Russian house of crimes. So they created an entire installation, an experience. No. Yeah. It's literally a house. It's called Russian Crimes, Russian House of Crimes. And they have all these like TVs showing like the bombings and the Ukrainian refugees and all the people dying and stuff like that. And you get to sit in there and like watch it and be sad. And it's pretty strange. And people were asking under Soros's post, the son, I forgot his name, Alexander Soros. When are you guys going to do the U.S. crimes, the U.S. House of Crimes? And they started naming like all the countries that the U.S. has invaded and all the deaths. Yeah, they were going off in the comments.
Why is it always done through like the art installations? Like
that's the color revolution. That's what Soros is known for. Like when you go to opensocietyfoundations.com or Gov or whatever it is, you're going to see how like what we do in Colombia, let's say, or like this country, driven. It's all cultural. Like we help education organizations, music, arts, we help the arts, we help, you know, they fund museums and stuff like that. So that's why they do it. So all the globalists are in Davos. And what, let's explain to the people really quick what is the point of the World Economic Forum.
So Charles, the point of the World Economic Forum, as I understand it.
Why are they there?
Where our masters get together to decide what atrocities come next for us. I'm sure there's a more political way of putting that, but basically it's the globalist meeting where all of the biggest nations get together to coordinate. Basically, what comes next for humanity? Well, for actually, the humans. Funny that you'd mention humans. So Charles Schwab goes in, gives his speech. Part of what it is that he talks about is what they're calling the fourth industrial revolution.
Right.
And a direct quote right off of the WEF website is described as the rethinking of how countries develop. How organizations create value, and even what it means to be human. First of all,
this is another win for the conspiracy theorist, right?
This guy, straight up, they are telling you to change what it means to be human. Where do we even start?
This is the same person that said you'll own nothing and you'll be happy.
Correct.
Right. So they talk about eating bugs to save the world from climate change because the cow farts, blah, 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 all that stuff. So here's a very descriptive tweet of what it is. You know, this is exactly what Corey Morgan says. The World Economic Forum isn't some grand conspiracy. Their goals are right out in the open, which is so true. They literally tell you what they want from the human race. They want centralized world governance with a socialist basis. One doesn't need to be a conspiracy theorist to speak up and oppose such a dangerous agenda. It's been out in the open with the topic of the pharmaceuticals, which we are very restrictive. You know, the vaccine stuff we can't really talk about on YouTube and stuff. When the pandemic happened, we know that the WHO and the World Economic Forum had plans for all of us. When it comes to immigration, when it comes to climate change, all these left wing Marxist ideologies is what they push for. But essentially, they want to centralize the world, right? And have more control over every single citizen, which is extremely problematic, scary. Yeah.
I go back to the reshaping what it means to be human. I'm a woman of faith. And to me, it's like we are made perfect in God's image.
Mm-hmm.
And to see the just so blatantly tell people that we are going to redefine. What does that actually mean? Because I had to search it. Like, what do they mean by redefining human? And it's, you know, what we're talking about is, number one, DNA manipulation. So enhancing and manipulating DNA. What that means is that you can change a person's genetic features. And yes, they're going to sell you on things like, well, we could get rid of diseases like that or whatnot. But now we're talking about creating like a superior level of human. So you in your stock tank, your stock, the kind of development that God made you in, how will you be able to compete with a machine? Because it's not just the manipulation of the DNA. These individuals are actually talking about what Crazy Alex Jones has been talking for a very long time, which is transhumanism. It's about enhancing human capabilities through AI. And that's the kind of future that you would see in an apocalyptic type of future that you would expect out of like the Hunger Games or something like that. And here we are, 2022, all of the most powerful world leaders under one roof, except Vladdy and Donald Trump. And their discussion is about how over the next couple of years,
we have to transform
redefine what it means to be human. And, you know, it's, I feel like not only is it an attack on us individually, but it's also an attack on people of faith. It's an attack on just natural development, the natural rule of law. And
well, it's a very satanic subhuman agenda that they've been, you know, pushing for a couple of years now. Yeah. It's I think it starts with the propaganda. And then, you know, eventually they
right, it starts to save the whales. And then it's like, it's
because then
really
they manipulate you little by little, right? Into it.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting tweet from, or something that the Alibaba group president said. He said, individual carbon foot tracker to monitor what you buy, what you eat, and where, how you travel. So these are the type of things that they're discussing. All these globalists are discussing. By the way, all these oligarchs, because that's really what they are, they are talking about the carbon footprint and climate change, and they fly there in their private planes, and they're, you know, they don't all come in a few private planes. It's like each individual one comes in their own plane. You see them all lined up in the airport,
mm-hmm.
right? So these are the people trying to make us eat bugs instead of meat to save the planet.
Yeah.
It's
just so, I think that what's scary to me is that it's so blatant. These were things that, like, if you were a conspiracy theory, you heard about in a YouTube video, and then you shut it off and you kind of like blew it off and you're like, there's no way that would happen. And now you've got world leaders openly talking about transhumanism, talking about, I mean, Charles Schwab just talked about the Great Reset. Openly discussing, you know, tracking, I mean, down to our emissions. And this is, again, I've brought this up before. I've told you about the Global Covenant of Mayors. And what this is that it's an extension of when these people want to apply these radical, if you will, limitations on how it is that we can live with their Green New Deal type policies, because it's so hard to be able to break through and get a federal type blanket approval for these things, what they've done is that they've created organizations like, again, the Global Covenant of Mayors, which what it does is that it takes globalist dollars and then it tells smaller cities, for example, the city of Miami and the county of Miami-Dade, if you implement these Green New Deal type policies that affect, you know, transportation and emissions and all these other things, if you do that, you too can get a cut of this globalist money. So what it's done is that it's opened up the back door for globalists to come into our backyard and implement
the Green New Deal policy that at a local level,
these
right?
Detrimental Green New Deal policies at a local level and completely you know, getting around a system that's there for a reason, which again goes to show to the dangers of globalism and how they sneak their way in at what would have otherwise seemed like a local level. It's like here you have, you know, why Suarez is at the WEF.
Yeah, Mayor Suarez from Miami.
Mayor Francis Suarez,
who is
a local,
the
city
golden
of,
boy of mayors. You know, Mr. Tech, how can I help you? Moved a bunch of people here, and now we rent this on affordable, and there's New Yorkers walking all around Miami. It's pretty annoying. He's over at the World Economic Forum,
and
he's trying to get to the White House. There was an article published. It was an opinion piece. And they said, you know, can Suarez make it to the White House? It's one of those things that they want to prop him up because they think that he could be a unifying force between the left and right, since he's very well liked with
the center left. He's the Democrat.
He's a Democrat. Right. He's not someone that the MAGA crowd would easily accept or even push. And that's the thing. And I asked one time, maybe I asked him under a comment, I said, how do you plan on getting Trump supporters support? Because he's very, you know, I guess, confident that he'll be able to succeed.
Well, because it's Miami, he thinks that because he'll have an R next to his name and he'll be the main contender there, yeah. And he thinks that that will be sufficient. I mean, and let's be honest, he might.
Yeah, because, but to get all the way to like
not to get on a national presidential.
Yeah, that's
for
what
a
I
presidential
mean.
Run. I can't imagine that that's something because I mean, again,
or even
like
as a senator, or even like, as governor.
You know what I really wonder though? Does he actually want that life? Francis likes the parties, celebrity greetings, the signed jerseys.
He likes playing tennis with Dave Grutman.
Right,
know that.
That's his life. You know, he wants to be the.
El papi of Miami. Yeah. You know, Jack Posobiec was detained in Davos.
For?
So, apparently for nothing. Like, he's now PolitiFact is fact-checking him, saying that he was not detained, but he was, and it's on video. And this is what he had to say today. He says, the police at the World Economic Forum surrounded us with rifles, held us for an hour, refused to let us leave, and stuck their hands down our pants one by one. If that isn't being detained, I'd really love to hear your definition at PolitiFact. Because what ended up happening was that when Jack Posobiec, I think, was like charging, they were like, him and his team were sitting outside what it looks like a coffee shop or something, and they were charging their equipment. All these police surround them, and you see it in the video. They have rifles, and they also had a patch that said World Economic Forum Police. So that
at some random coffee shop, like
in Davos, like by the conference, wow. By the wherever that right. takes place. Savannah, who's another independent journalist who filmed it, she posted the picture and video of the World Economic Forum police patch. And then PolitiFact and Reuters came out and said, no, there's no such thing as a World Economic Forum police. What's really happening is that because the conference is taking place, they wear this patch that says World Economic Forum Police. So now Jack is like fighting back and forth with like PolitiFact and whatever, because they're just trying to fact check his claims. They're all on video. They're all on video. So he was, God knows, it was probably somebody that tipped him off, you know, and
that he was there.
Right. That he was there. He's part of the opposition. You know, he has millions of followers on Twitter, whatnot. And I think part of the reason why he was probably targeted is because Jack Posobiec is the sole reason why there is no, or one, the main reason I would say why we don't have a disinformation board anymore. So the last time we were here, we talked about the Ministry of Truth, remember?
Mm-hmm.
With Nina. So Jack was the first person to start off this wave of tweets about Nina, her past tweets, you know, this Ministry of Truth, whatever.
Showing that she was not right. This, like, nonpartisan, that was going to be fair, that she was clearly there to censor the voices of the right.
So because of those tweets, then he, you know, other millions or thousands of followers, hundreds of thousands of Twitter users, and started spreading the memes, right? The meme warfare comes in. And basically, the New York Times wrote a piece saying that part of the reason why they had to backtrack on the disinformation board is because of the right-wing backlash. And they named Jack Posojevic. So I think that's my conspiracy theory, that he was possibly targeted just to, like, fuck around with him a little bit.
Because he already made so much noise.
Right, he is a noisemaker.
Who knows? Yeah. Maybe they wanted to have... I mean, they did... So the ministry... correct me if I'm wrong, but the Ministry of Truth is still on. It's just that now they've changed who the director of the Ministry of Truth
is? No, it's been dissolved, from my understanding. And then she resigned. What they are going to focus on, because that was also going to target Latino disinformation, right? And along with, like, the Russia, Ukraine and all this stuff. I think what they're really going to focus on now, and I don't know how they're going to do it, is the Russian disinformation. So I don't know what that looks like. I haven't looked into it. Perhaps we should. But, you know, Jack kind of got rid of that little problem
we had. I would imagine that they'll label, I mean, I think we said this, but they'll label everything Russian disinformation. I mean, if we go back to 2016, then what we had to endure between 2016 and 2020, what wasn't labeled Russian disinformation?
Right. So speaking of Russian disinformation or you know, more or less related to Russia, everyone's favorite rhino, Dan Crenshaw, went to Ukraine for a photo op. So after shaming conservatives and Trump supporters for not wanting to give more money, billions of dollars to Ukraine, calling everyone a Putin asset and saying that whoever doesn't want to give this money is against U.S. allies, he has decided to fly over with their tax dollars to do a photo op in Ukraine. Private jet, I'm sure. So this is actually pretty hilarious. They've all been there. I mean, Chuck Schumer, Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, Susan Collins, Democrats, Republicans, they're all in bed with Ukraine.
Well, it's all the same Soros puppets that you're used to seeing time and time and time again.
Yeah.
In the same Soros photo ops, right?
Every single time.
Crenshaw is, do you understand? Like, talk to me about how can you be an injured veteran and still be one of the most hated characters in the conservative party?
He is such a rhino.
Yeah.
He's cringe. He's so a rhino.
Real opposition, right?
He secretly tries to cancel conservatives who are dissidents or criticize him online. He has even said that people like Fleckas are like the controlled opposition, you know, a podcaster in St. Petersburg.
He
literally said that.
The nerve. Like,
the nerve. Him and Alex, you know, from X Strategy. So Crenshaw is, along with the other globalists, is someone that is it's part of the Unit Party, right? This is a great term, the Unit Party. The same people that are probably going to vote for red flag laws and the same people who don't want to fix our elections.
The same people who don't want us to get involved in the civic process of electing officials that are going to represent us. These are the people that want us sleepy, busy, taking our kids to school, going to work, making dinner, so that you never realize that these people are, this Unit Party does not care about the true desires of the party that elected them to be a representative of.
Yeah.
They're there for the common goal of, again, it goes back to the globalist.
Right. With the whole Ukraine situation, and this is kind of like one of the last things I will say, we've gone for a while now, but they're struggling with the headlines right now because the last remaining battle or territory that the Russians were surrounding was in Mariupol. I think that's how you say it. And 1,500, if not more, of this Azov battalion and military, Ukrainian military, surrendered to Russian because they were running out of ammunition and stuff like that. And a lot of them needed medical help. So the Western media presented this war as Russia is a third world military, they're not trained, they're not good, they can't fight at night. Ukraine's gonna win. They have the support of Canada, US, Germany, the West. We've been training them for years. So they presented this scenario, and now they're struggling with the headlines. They're like maneuvering and trying to kind of wishy-wash the headlines instead of saying, hey, you guys kind of lost the war, like the last the last remaining little territory that you guys had is now controlled by Russia. So all of basically Eastern Ukraine is now filled with these Russians.
Well, because then they're putting Russian flags, like that the $48 billion went where?
Where are they going? So it's something that is very scary. I don't think you've seen the headlines because there's been so much going on with the shooting and stuff like that. But somebody from the Ukrainian, either the military or part of like their, you know, I don't know what you call it, intelligence or something, they said that now the goals have moved. Now they're saying that they want to take Crimea from the Russians. So if this happens, I do think that we may see some nukes fly around the world. Yeah, absolutely. Very scary when it comes to stuff like that. But I think this concludes our episode 8.
On that note, impending world war. Gee.
Impending world war. I think this will be it for today.
Until next time.
And please, once again, like, share, and subscribe to our channel. We're also on Apple and Spotify. Thank you.
Thank you, guys, and see you next time.